All right. Well, guys, it's good to see y'all today. Matt Kelly here, Davis Craig here. Very excited to be spending time with y'all. Matt, jump in. Tell us a little bit about your story and how you got here to Grace. What is it that you even do here? So,
yes, Chris Rivers. Yes. I'm grateful to be here with you. Like Chris said, my name is Matt Kelly. I've been at the church a little over 24 years. Came here straight out of college when the church was roughly 100 people. Moved here to be a part of the church as a volunteer slash very, very part-time mm-hmm. role doing youth. Quickly moved into leading worship.
And by the way, you came on staff, but like how many staff were there?
I mean, I think there were three okay. when I came on part-time.
So you were really like fresh into this whole
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, yeah. I came in. Yeah, I came in super early.
Yeah.
And so there was a worship guy, and there was a administrative person, and Matt was teaching, and that was about it.
Yeah.
it was really low-key. But I was doing something really low-key then,
yeah.
working with the youth and led worship on the side, and the worship guy left at the time, and so I came in part-time and started doing that, and then just worked for a company called Ubi for 6 years.
Yeah.
And then once we got to about 1,000 people, we had to hire someone to lead worship. We were at one campus, Pelham. Mm-hmm. And they talked to me about it, decided if I wanted to do this or not. And we did. My wife and I thought it was the right time. So we came here and came on full-time and been here ever since. And since then, at that time, there was no thought of launching campuses. That kind of naturally fell under me, working with worship and doing some AV stuff. And so I kind of got in the campus launching role, and then also started working with our interns, and had a lot to do with that over the last 10 years because that was kind of on my heart with some men that had built into me over the years. Mm-hmm. So it fit perfectly for that. And then several years ago, became a staff governing elder, and get to serve on that board now too, as well as serve on the leadership team for our church, mm-hmm. which manages our staff.
And for those of us that don't know what a governing elder is, can you share with us what that is and what that means?
Yeah, the governing elders run the majority of the church, run the major details of the church. We have four non-staff and three staff. And the leadership team reports up to the elders. And then we make decisions like if a campus is launched, some major if there is a big shepherding situation that needs to come up to us, if we are going to purchase something, mm-hmm. Purchase land, do something with the campus, like a new building or something like that. The governing elders have changed over the years. I mean, a long time ago, they were the staff. They were handling all the groups. They were buying playground equipment. The staff has grown to a point now to where the elders are in larger decisions, and we decide about what we're doing as a church as a whole and where we need to move.
Yeah, and we have, so you're a governing elder, we have governing elders, but we also have shepherding elders too.
We do.
Could you describe what a shepherding elder does and their responsibility?
Yeah, shepherding elder, and as you know, the word elder is interchangeable with pastor, and so our shepherding elders are our campus pastors, our group life pastors, the guys that carry the title pastor here. Mm-hmm. Elder and pastor are interchangeable, so we use those words kind of together.
Yeah, that's right. So that's great. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah.
And so you also, so some of the ministries that you're responsible for, one of them is internships. And Davis, you're here. You help run our internships.
That's right.
And so how long have you known Matt? When did you guys get connected? Because you guys have been working together for a long time, right?
Yeah, I've known Matt for over 5 years, probably more like six plus. I met Matt. I was not an intern for us at the time. I met Matt at a cookout with all the interns because I was dating a girl that was an intern for Matt at the time. That's how I met him. It was right after
he was trying to date her. We thought he was suspect.
Oh no. That's right.
This predates
all that. That's right.
No, Iris had just been born. So
that's right.
Your last
I forgot
one,
about that.
Your last one was a newborn.
That's right.
That's when I met Matt Kelly. But then more so got to know him as I came on as a resident, which is a program that we have for people trying to figure out if they need to work at a local church.
Yep.
And so that was how got their hooks in me and got real connected to Matt Kelly through that.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Okay, time out real quick. Hey, just make sure that this mic is as close to your lips as possible.
Super close.
Yeah, that's good. So to just
boy, bring it.
Okay, let's bring it back in.
Yeah, that's right.
That's awesome. Well, that's cool. I like that. Matt, let's talk a little bit about, so you guys have known each other for a while, and you work together, and you're doing a lot of similar things with what I wanted to talk to you about today, which is really, I don't know if the word is downline or leadership or discipleship. I wanted your help not long ago.
Yeah.
We were launching the new Authentic Manhood study, and I was at Powdersville, and I wanted you to come in and do a halftime training with about 20 of our leaders to help them think through, okay, we just launched this study. We just went through it. What do we need to be thinking about? What is important for us as men that are trying to do discipleship? What do we need to be focusing on? And you came in and you talked about how to create a downline, or you talked about some of this.
Yeah.
And so what I wanted to do, I thought it would be helpful for other churches, for other leaders to hear some of the thoughts that you had. So maybe talk to us a little bit about what you shared, why it was important even.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, early on, I had 4 or 5 men that were a few years older than me that helped me make major decisions in my life.
Mm-hmm.
They really did. That there wasn't a major decision that I made that they were not involved in. And so it impacted me to the point to where I felt kind of an obligation. And it's a little the reason why I started working with our residents and our interns, and they put me in that role because I had heart for that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the word probably, I know downline sounds like a trendy word, but it really is that. Who is the person that you are thinking is going to replace you or can do what you're doing in 4 years or mm-hmm. 3 years or 2 years? Who are you building into that they are the next person to be taking your role? And we feel like that is the opportunity of the church, and we feel like those are good things. We don't feel those are threats. We would say that's the way we're supposed to be doing if we are going to reproduce and our church is going to continue. Because at some point, we're just getting older.
Yeah.
As we're getting older, we've got some people that need to be taking the reins and have got to figure things out. And to be honest with you, I mean, the interns now are relating more to Davis and Maddie in their stage of life than they are my stage of life. I'm more of a mm-hmm. father figure, and they more are going to go to Davis and say, hey, what do you think I need to do? Because Davis is closer to them in age, but it's farther enough away from them to be able to give them some direction.
Mm-hmm.
And so my idea that day with your group at Roundtable was, who from your Roundtable group or who are you around who are the 2 or 3 people that you need to be investing time into, and that in 2 or 3 years they're going to be doing something that you're doing currently?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How did the light bulb come on for you to start thinking through that? Why was it important? Like, when, most more importantly, when was it important to you to start thinking through that?
I mean, I think for any healthy organization that has growth, as it grows, you've got to have leaders. And working in the worship world, as we start launching campuses, I mean, my initial thought was, I don't have anybody that can lead worship for these campuses. So mm-hmm. what have I got to do to find these people? And I was thinking about students and who are these leaders. And a lot of it was just thinking, I need to go find the young talent, and this is going to take 2 or 3 years to build in. And so we have guys now like Blake Payne and Brian Darnell that are all worship leaders for us that all were interns.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that's a little bit of our internship program is we'll have, 25 interns for the summer. But through that, can 6 of them do something for us or make an impact for us in the future?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so it really just birthed out of, we knew we were going to need leaders, and we knew we were going to need to keep this thing going. So how do we replicate ourselves? I can't be at 4 campuses. I can't be at 5 campuses.
Yeah.
And so I could be at 1 campus. So what am I doing to build the people that can help carry this out if we're going to keep rolling?
Yeah. You know? What are some practical things that you do, and maybe Davis, you could even share some things that you've seen Matt do. And I'm not saying that you're the expert at all this. I'm just saying, yeah, like, sure. What do you do that helps to make sure that's like top of point, most important?
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing that I think people don't think about is they don't think it's going to take a lot of time, and people. It's going to take a lot of your own personal time, but I don't think you really know about people for about 2 to 3 years what they're capable of. Mm-hmm. So it just takes a lot of being in the same space together to see, okay, is this person, are they doing what they say they're going to do? Is it panning out? Are they able just to win me in the moment, but they're not winning anybody else? I mean, all those character pieces, you don't see that in 3 months. You see that in 3 years, mm-hmm. who a person really is. And I think a lot of times we want to make a quick fix on something, and that's just real hard, mm-hmm. you know? And so I just think it takes a lot of time, and I think it takes tons of different situation times. Like, I had a lunch with a guy today. I took one of my worship leaders with me. I was like, hey, come with me and just sit and interact, and you and I can talk about it afterwards. There, you just don't get to do a lot by yourself. You always have somebody with you that you're kind of training and talking through. And then on the way home, I called him, and I was like, hey, all right, tell me what you think. Tell me what you think about that lunch. And then we just get to talk through it. Yeah. And that's just a piece of it, because that's how he learns.
Yeah. You know? So, I mean, just even that, practically speaking, is foreign to many. I mean, I don't even have the margin. I don't even think like that sometimes. Yeah. And I'm awesome. I'm just kidding.
No, I hear you.
No, but I mean, like, how do you plan this out? Is this like a goal? Is this like a habit? Are these... I mean, because now you're doing lots of things. You are not just scheduling a lunch with a guy, but you're thinking, who am I going to have to come to this lunch? How do you do all that in your mind? What motivates you to do that? And how, most importantly, do we get other people to do that as well?
Well, I will say, real early on, when in my young 20s, I would be in situations and I wouldn't know what to do. And I would go to older men and be like, hey, how do I handle that? And I remember getting frustrated at work one day, and my boss was telling me 2 or 3 things that I need to do. And I was like, hey, I don't know how to do any of this. And I'm frustrated. I don't know how to do it. How do you know how to do all this? And he basically said, well, I spent the first 4 years not asking the correct questions. So I learned what questions to learn. He's like, and I'm trying to short circuit that for you, so you can just know what questions and you don't have to go through that painful piece. He goes, because there's other painful pieces that you need to go through on your own. He goes, this is not one of them. Let's not spend time. And so that is the thing I try to think through now, is that how can I make a 24-year-old think like a 29-year-old sometimes in situations? What can I train them that they don't have to spend the next 5 years, you know, overcompensating for a deficit or something? Deficit's the wrong word, but how can I just get people to think differently? And so really, to be honest with you, the way you get people to think differently, you put them in a bunch of different situations and you just give them reps. And it just takes a lot of time. And so now there's usually not anywhere I go that I don't carry somebody that's 5-10 years younger. If it's a meeting that they definitely don't need to be in it, that's one thing. But if there's a meeting that has some leeway, I always bring somebody with me just so they can see the interaction and see what it's like. And not that I have all the answers, because sometimes they're gonna read that room differently than I will. And I'll be like, oh, I hadn't, just to be honest with you, it helps me learn too. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Two things you said, Matt Kelly, that I think are real helpful. And I've seen play out, honestly, for me being in your downline, I would consider myself, is you said something about it being a threat, which I think is interesting. Because part of the idea of a downline is that you are trying to replace yourself.
Right.
You're trying to raise up someone that is going to do the things that you're doing now.
Right.
So there's a piece of that that's a threat that I think is real interesting, because I think that's actually, although people wouldn't say it, it seems to me that that's something that keeps people from really wanting to pursue something in this way, is because it's threatening to them personally. They have to let go of those things and then be willing to let go of more and more of kind of the work they're doing, of the things that they're doing, and then get to do new things. But those new things are unknown, so people don't really want to wade into those waters. So I think that's real interesting that you were mentioning earlier. But then I also think there's this piece around patience where you're saying it's not 3 months, it's 3 years. It takes time to really flesh some of these ideas out, which I've seen this play out for me, but I've also seen it play out for other people that you've developed, where, you know, you had plenty of opportunities in the first 1, 2, 3, maybe even 4 years for some people to write them off, to be done, to be out. But your ability to be patient and know that, that we're not seeing everything that's under the hood. We're not seeing everything that's in the tank in these moments. And so there's a certain amount of patience that that you have to have with them to really afford them the opportunities. And then all of a sudden something clicks and, oh, wow, this person's really valuable to right. what we're doing.
Right.
They have a real contribution to make, but it would have been so easy to write them off a year ago.
Right.
So how do you not write them off? How do you choose to be patient? How do you know when to write them off?
Mm.
When to be
yes,
done?
Right.
You know, I mean, there's something interesting there.
Yeah. I mean, and that, I think the piece, you know, it's one of these deals where if it's a moral failure, that's a different issue.
Mm-hmm.
If it's something where they legitimately had not been taught something, or they had, they don't know how to do something. I mean, there's tons of things I don't know how to do,
mm-hmm.
you know? And, you know, real early on when you're young, if you're in a certain environment, you're like, well, gosh, I didn't learn that. My family didn't teach me that. I didn't get taught that way. I wasn't grown up that way. And you can become even arrogant in that respect and be like, well, gosh, why didn't anybody teach me this? But to be honest with you, there's tons of things that you just learn by living life,
mm-hmm.
you know? And for us as a culture, to be honest with you, a lot of that doesn't start till after you get out of college. You haven't had a lot of opportunities to fail. And the best way you learn is by failing. And so I am good with taking 3 years watching a guy respond to his failures. And that's a lot of it. If I can see a guy respond to his failures well and be humble and just be able to make changes or accept correction, bro, you can work with that all day long,
mm-hmm.
you know? And that is a big piece that I think Davis is that's brought out right here is that, you know, humility is a big key for this, for these mm-hmm. guys, and being able to receive instruction. And I think for us too, there's tons of things that I've learned from being around these young guys,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah. You had shared in that halftime training that we had, that you were not really good at loving others, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
I thought after when I was looking at these notes, I said, did I write that right? Am I going to get in trouble? But
right.
you said that. And yeah. so how have you learned to love people well, while with this principle?
Yeah. I mean, I'll be honest with you, I'm not,
yeah.
I'm not by nature a huge shepherding guy.
Which is so crazy to me because you seem like you are. So just, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I hear you. No, I mean, I have to intentionally think about what I'm doing with that. And really that conversation birthed out of reading 1 John over the summer and reading about what it looks like to love others. And loving others means, I think we feel like loving others a lot of times means being nice. And loving others actually a lot of times means telling people the truth.
Mm.
And so I think that's what I was getting out of reading 1 John is that, you know, he's making this big argument about who Jesus says he is. He's like, hey, man, Jesus is actually who he says he is. And let's be clear, loving people is telling people the truth about who Jesus is.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my kind of conviction of it is that me loving people is actually telling them the truth about themselves. And I think sometimes that's the part that just takes so much time and a lot of energy
mm-hmm.
is that when you enter into that dialogue, when I go to somebody, I'm like, hey man, you did not run that meeting well. Then I know that is an hour conversation. And a lot of times I don't want to love them because I don't feel like entering in on all that. Mm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, because it's going to take an hour.
So I'm like, this is going to take another hour and we're going to have to hash this out and probably it's going to be a follow-up conversation.
And it's messy.
Yeah, it's messy. And I could be wrong.
Hmm.
You know, there's all those things where I'm like, I was speaking in. I'd be like, I mean, I might be misspeaking. I might have had a bad day and
yeah.
read that wrong and they were fine. But I do think that is part of the deal is that loving people actually is entering in enough to say yourself, okay, I could be wrong, but let me tell you this and then we'll see if this is right. Because there are plenty of times when I've told somebody something about the way they've reacted and they're like, man, I really struggle with that.
Yeah.
And hey, I've never had anybody speak into that for me. Will you tell me how I can get better? I mean, that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
That's the deal that I have to really enter in. And to be honest with you, if I say I don't love people, it's because I'm selfish and I don't feel like entering in all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, It's just a lot of work.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
So Davis is a story of someone that you've entered in, I'm assuming, and it's sure. paid off a dividend. He's now here.
He's running, contributing. Those, he's doing it. He's running doing the interns and residents.
So yeah. that's one story. But I mean, how many stories have you had where it didn't work out? I mean, how much time have you put in that didn't pay off?
Oh, tons. No, I've run a ton of people off.
What do you mean by that?
I mean, I have several people that do not care for me at all. Because we've had tough conversations. And that doesn't always go well.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I probably didn't handle some of that well, and some of that I probably did. And they just weren't ready to receive it. And some of it, like I said, I just probably didn't handle well.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it doesn't negate my responsibility for me to answer for telling the truth. Mm. Either way.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Or feel like I'm doing what I feel like I'm called to do.
Yeah.
To be a follower of Jesus in that. You know, I'm be like, hey, I feel like I got to tell you this, and I don't know if I'm right or wrong, but let me enter in and tell you this.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is our 15th year of doing Kairos, which is our summer internship program. That's so Matt Kelly's been involved in the vast majority of those summers.
That's right.
So that's somewhere around 300 people that in some way, shape, or form have probably gotten some feedback from Matt Kelly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All 300 of those people are not here. Yeah, you know
right,
what I'm saying?
That's right.
They're not. And that's where I think the humility piece you were talking about is that the only way that any of this works is really humility on both sides.
That's right.
Is that, you know, Matt Kelly has to be humble enough to say, I could be wrong. You know, it could have been a bad day for me. I could be misreading the situation, all of that. Mm. But then especially on the receiving end, there has to be a humility to say, I don't know what's most true about me, more likely than not. I don't know the ways that I need to grow. I don't know the ways that I need help and all of that. I mean, so many of those things are true. Mm. I mean, my last two reviews with Matt Kelly have been the exact same thing. It's the same exact failures 2 years in a row. And I still have a job. I mean, the fact that that's true means that, you know, there's a certain level of patience that he's had with me to try to grow in those areas. But yeah, I mean, it's true because I've seen the play out of, you know, the number of people that you make an investment and then not only is it not reciprocated, sometimes it's despised. You know,
that's right.
So there's difficulty. Anytime you're going to enter in with somebody to this extent, there's going to be a potential loss.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And Davis is right. I've had interns come to me or people come to me and say, hey, you said this to me the other day. You're actually wrong.
Hmm.
This. And I got to take it. And I got to be like, man, I'm sorry.
Hmm.
You're right. I overspoke. That's what I thought, but you've proved me wrong. I appreciate you coming back to me and telling me.
Yeah, that's good. So there's a humility piece here, which is the threat. That's what he was talking about, right. just recognizing that. And then there's the patience piece of just entering into a relationship that you know is going to take time and being willing to take time to do that. I mean, if we were to land the plane and you were to commission us, you were to tell yourself, Matt, what you know now, back in the day when you started here, what would you tell yourself and us as leaders that would be helpful for us in creating a downline and loving people well?
I think the big thing is that that a lot of times it's going to not come at the time that you think. So you've got to have a bunch of flexibility. And you've got to be open to the Spirit working through all that. Because if you have people in your life that you're doing work with, that they care about you or they care for you and they trust you and you're trying to build into them, they're going to call you at the most inopportune time or something's going to happen and you're going to have to clear your schedule. And I think that's just part of it. That's part of the work, you know? Mm-hmm. And the thing is that you actually, if you do clear your schedule, or you do change things or you find something, then you get to be a part of some things. You get to see God work stuff. You're actually going to miss out if you don't open up to that, you know? And then I think for the guys that are married, I think they need to communicate to their spouse what they're trying to do. Mm. and get them on board so they will understand what we're doing together. Mm-hmm. So when you go home and you're like, hey, this couple's coming over tonight, and here's the three questions we're going to ask them, and here's why. It lets her know, oh, okay, I got a mission. I got a mission. I know what we need to do. And or if you're like, hey, babe, this guy I've been meeting with, you know, he had a crisis tonight. I got to go, and I'm sorry. I'm going to be there for about 2 hours. Mm. If she knows what you're trying to do, it doesn't wreck the world. Mm-hmm. She's like, oh, yeah, this is what we're doing. It's part of it.
That's good.
You know, I think communication and flexibility. Mm.
Yeah, but I do think it's helpful. I mean, for the group that's listening to this, the pieces around the apologetic for doing it, I think is really important.
Yeah.
Because it's just, we've talked to a bunch of people that are trying to ask us questions about internships, residency, and for all of them, the fact that you would be involved, or Matt Williams would be involved, or Bill White would be involved, or David Delk would be involved, to the level that y'all are with people that are ultimately trying to replace y'all,
yeah,
is the most foreign idea,
right?
Or so far from reality for them. So I think those pieces for this equip side is real helpful, because without, and this is what I, whenever we do that HR thing where we, yeah, talk about interns, residents, whatever, that's always how I lead, is like, look, none of this happens or works if at the highest level 10, 15 years ago, they hadn't said, hey, this is a value for us. This is right. Something that as a church, we can't neglect doing. And it is a crap ton of work. Mm-hmm. It's way more work than doing it yourself. Because there's so many things that you have to give away so that people have opportunities to fail. And they are going to fail, and they are going to create a mess, and you are going to have to help them clean up that
mess. That's right.
When you could have done it and had no mess and moved on with your life. So
that's right.
There's a legitimate sacrifice piece that I think if y'all had not been willing and haven't been willing to make over and over and over again, that none of this would be going the way that it is going for us. Right. So I think that we can't undersell all that. So I think that's real important to say.
That's good. Yeah. Well, this has been really good. I am grateful that we could do this. I think I got a ton of stuff out of it from the idea of the threat, patience, flexibility, and then I think strategic. Mm-hmm. You know, if there were four big, I'm thinking circles with arrows next to them, and it's just this, you know, thing, you just keep moving around. You know, you're just like, hey, have I done this? Have I done this? I'm in this box yet, you know?
Yeah.
So I could see even creating kind of like a little icon for it. We won't do that, but
yeah. That's
how my brain thinks.
Yeah, sure.
but this has been really good, and I'm grateful that you guys could share some stuff with us, and it's been good. So thanks.
You bet.
Yeah.